little later on, Billy Jaffe from Nesson in the NHL Network, but always a pleasure to sit back and chat with Chris Johnston as we are now 13 days away from the trade deadline, which will be on Monday, February 26th. Are you ready? Are you prepared?
I'm kind of curious what's going on. I mean, we haven't seen much action. It's getting to a point where I would say that that's notable.
Yeah, I was going to ask you a little bit about that, but the other part of this, it's kind of like a rite of passage that we get to this point and there seems to be some out there who go, I don't think anything's going to happen. I think it's going to be really quiet. Every time that has been uttered, usually it ends up, you know, being madness for a couple hours towards the end, and I still think that is coming. Why? Why is it quiet right now? And I'll pose this to you. Maybe I'll ask it instead of is it because there are so many sellers now as opposed to years past? Because it really feels like there's a lot of sellers out there right now, Chris.
Well, there is, and that's certainly a factor in it. You know, what someone suggested to me is, you know, another aspect of that is that, you know, I think buyers are much more unlikely to give up first-round picks than they were in the past. I mean, with sort of an unintended consequence of having the draft lottery rules change is that there's risk for teams that give up a first-round pick. And, you know, even middle-of-the-road teams can't be 100% sure, you know, even ones fairly comfortably in a playoff spot, that they're going to make the playoffs for sure. And certainly even if you lottery protect those picks, you know, sometimes from your vagaries of the league, you know, that's a bit more of a risk. So I think that the number of sellers and maybe, you know, some buyers' second thoughts about what they want to give up, I mean, that goes back to maybe seeing a Martin Hansel package for last year or Kevin Shattenkirk, and those players not make, you know, a huge difference to the Wild and then the Washington Capitals last season, respectively, but also just, I think, a shift in general in how GMs approach this with their future assets, because when we're talking about team selling, you know, virtually every team that is doing so is looking for high picks or you know, coveted prospects.
So as we get closer and closer, I mean, there's names out there, but I'm curious about type or position of player, which is going to be most valuable heading into the next couple of weeks. Is there one? Is it that easy? Can we say that, you know, for me, I look at Calgary and go, they need third line help or somebody to play top nine in their forward ranks. Is there something out there that's more, you know, more wanted than other things?
Well, you know, we don't have a lot of defensemen, really, on the market. And, you know, I think that's something mm-hmm. even really good teams tend to still want at this time of year. You know, I saw the Tampa Bay Lightning play last night, and as good as they are, and they're at the top of the league for a reason, you know, they have a third pairing that, you know, I think if they had their druthers, they wouldn't be rolling out right now, that they would have a little bit more depth there. And you know, I certainly expect Tampa to be one of the teams that's active and trying to add a player at that position, you know, be it perhaps a Ryan McDonough or possibly Mike Green from Detroit. You know, beyond Green, there aren't a lot of rental type of defensemen that I think would you know, get your attention. And you know, so that stands out as a need. I mean, also centers. There's certainly very few rental centers. You know, Thomas Plekanec, Mark Letestu, maybe Derek Ryan from Carolina, but not really a ton of guys that play that position. And you know, I think most, not every team, but a lot of contending teams could think that they would need that. And then there isn't a ton. You know, what we have in excess of is wingers and especially skilled wingers because of some of the biggest names that are on the market, you know, fit that role. And, you know, I think that there will be a market for them, but, you know, that one's a little bit more of a delicate dance because, you know, there is a little bit more of that commodity available.
I want to ask you about the Chicago Blackhawks. You know, didn't ask anybody, but I'm going to lump them in and suggest they're going to be in sell mode. This is, you know, boy, this is weird. In the last decade, to see this team, you know, where they're at, to kind of be on the outside looking in, and I'm not sure where they go. What do you make of the Blackhawks and where they are today?
Well, it's a tough spot for everyone there because I'm not accustomed to it, just as we're seeing it. As hockey fans or observers, you know, they're not used to going through it themselves. And, you know, what really stands out to me is the way Stan Bowman approached last offseason. You know, when they were swept in the first round against Nashville, he had some pretty strong comments mm-hmm. Following that loss about status quo not being acceptable, about the need for change. And, you know, you can't help but wonder if that will carry over, that sentiment from the front office, you know, beyond even the trade deadline this year. I mean, there's only so much they can sell. I mean, I don't think we're talking in any way, shape, or form about their core players, either because they're still not the type of players they would trade, or they might have a contract that looks like Brent Seabrook's, and you know, it's just an immovable object at this point. But, you know, they will definitely be looking to shift direction. I think that they have to get some younger players into the lineup. They might not have enough guys in their roster and in their organization at this point. But, you know, I would think that you're going to see some turnover there because that's the only way forward. I mean, we've seen other teams do it. I know that the New Jersey Devils have fallen back a little bit, but they're a team this year that no one saw even competing for a playoff spot, and they injected a whole bunch of young players
right.
and some speed into their lineup, and it's made a difference. I mean, I'm not going to say that a team with John and Taves and Patrick Kane even making $10.5 million each can't contend again. It is possible, but they're going to need some help from players that are outperforming their contracts, and that likely means guys on entry-level deals. So, you know, there's going to have to be some attempt there from Stan Bowman, I would think, to turn over and to get futures to build around those guys still again. And, you know, I think the biggest question is Stan Bowman still the GM, and is Joel Quenneville the head coach beyond this year? I mean, that, again, isn't something that's happening in season, but, you know, there's no guarantees that stability will stay in place just because it is unfamiliar territory and no one in Chicago is happy with where they find themselves.
With Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, senior hockey writer, our NHL insider for Metro Ford. I do want to, I mean, we've had an ongoing conversation and dialogue about the Ottawa Senators, and the question will come back to what they might do, but interesting last week, and it may, because of the timing of it, I think might have flown under some radar, but Pierre Dorion, the general manager, gets an extension, and the president, who was only there for less than a year, is gone. What is going on over in Ottawa, and should we be concerned, or should Senator fans be concerned about what appears to be a little bit of a tumultuous office?
There should be concern. I mean, I don't know how else to view this, because there's been a steady stream of people on the business side of that team's operation that have flooded out of the organization, and you know, they're probably the smallest organization in the entire NHL, just in terms of how many people they employ. So because of that smaller nature, I mean, it does resonate. It does count for something. And you know, Tom Anselmi was a longtime executive with Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, one of their top executives. As they built, you know, Leafs haven't done too much right the last 20 years, but one thing they have done well is expand their footprint, both in downtown Toronto with some various ventures, and you know, the bottom line of the organization has improved. And, you know, he was one of the main decision makers in that. And right, less than a year into going to Ottawa to help them, you know, with their new arena development, not just the arena itself, but the whole structure and everything, the real estate around it, which is, you know, part of the way that's going to be something that you know, hopefully makes the organization money. You know, the fact that he's walking away basically a year in. I mean, it's actually been a few weeks, it sounds like, since he officially resigned, even though the news didn't come public until Friday night. So, you know, that raises some alarm bells, because there has been a history here, you know, and due to the former COO is involved in legal proceeding around the nature of his firing. And you know, some of that has been available in public court documents about allegations about how difficult it's been to work for Eugene Melnyk. You know, we've seen the business side of the operation before our eyes have some issues, and the Senators are down 900 or 1,000 seats a game sold.
Yeah.
They didn't sell out last year in the playoffs. Obviously, they've tarped sections of the Canadian Tire Center this year, which drew some headlines when they decided to do that at the start of the regular season. So, you know, the picture off the ice has been as concerning, I would say, as on. And you know, on is what we talk about mostly here. And so I think that the two stories are separate, because I don't sense that they're related, that there was a power struggle here by any means or anything like that. But, you know, this team is struggling off the ice. They're having some business issues that they need to fix. And Tom Anselmi found it where he couldn't work for Eugene Melnyk anymore after just a year. He stepped away. And so obviously they have to get that healthy. And at the same time, you know, having a team that struggles, you know, makes it tougher to sell anything. I mean, that's true of every market, that you know, when you don't have the product you'd like to roll out there, it is a little harder to sell tickets and sponsorships and suites and all the things that makes the business of hockey grow. And you know, what Pierre Dorion has done is sold Eugene Melnyk on a plan to, you know, I think do a little bit of a rebuild. They're not labeling it that. I think that, you know, in some places that has negative connotations, but, you know, they're certainly have a buy-in from the owner to sell off some of their organization and, you know, as an extensive scale to being a schemes family manager, and you know, he received a lot of confidence to go forward with that plan. So, you know, after a meeting last week between the owner and the GM, a 3-year extension was signed, so he's under contract for 4 more years. And, you know, I think that they've got a plan now in terms of, you know, what's going to be moved. And, you know, the one thing I can tell you that Eric Carlson was important players they might trade. That's just not something on the table right now. But, you know, virtually every other player in the organization is a possibility to be traded, because they've got to move forward right now. After, you know, from a position where they've traded away some draft picks and prospects, and, you know, they really need to fill their pipeline up.
Chris, as we've been speaking, there's some reporting that I'm just seeing for the first time. I'm sure you're already aware of it, but former Flame goalie Brian Elliott is out in Philadelphia for 5 to 6 weeks. He had surgery today on a muscle issue. They are a playoff-spotted team right now, sitting third in their division. You know, we spent a lot of time. We had hometown hockey in Canmore on the weekend, so we were doing some extra programming, and I spent a lot of time talking about goalies at the trade deadline, and I think it's such a delicate, tricky scenario. But let me ask you, I mean, the Flyers, with that injury, do they have to go out? Should they go out and acquire a goaltender? Is there a goaltender or goaltenders out there that could be acquired at this deadline?
Well, I think that they should, myself. I mean, that doesn't mean they will. I mean, it's funny. We so rarely see goalies move at the deadline. I mean, the most notable one I can remember, and it's going way back, is when Edmonton Oilers got Dwayne Rolison from Minnesota prior to their long run to the Stanley Cup final all the way back in 2006. But by and large, we don't see these kind of moves made in season, and certainly they don't end up being consequential when they are. You know, in this case, if you're Philadelphia and you're towing a line, I think you should do it. I mean, Alex Lyon is the third goalie there, and he's played some games for them. But Michael Neyvirth has not always been the most reliable goaltender for them. And then, you know, I if I'm them, I'm calling, you know, to see about Robin Leonard right now. I mean, he's a pending free agent, so you're not disrupting the balance beyond the season. But to me, if you're the Flyers, you know, you can't afford to waste what you've done over 55 games because you don't get a good enough goaltending from here on out. And it's unfortunate that Brian Elliott has that injury, but to me, that should compel them to act. You know, I'm not sure that they will do so, but in my eyes, they should. I've kind of wondered a bit about the Islanders.
Yeah.
I know that they believe their issues are down to structure and some injuries in their blue line and issues there, but, you know, that's a team that's scoring among the best in the league and also giving up among the worst in the league and could miss the playoffs. So, I mean, I do understand it's a tough thing to consider and, you know, to disrupt the balance you're mentioning, but I think desperate times call for desperate measures, and the races are just so tight if you're a team like the Flyers that, you know, I think that should be a market they're in.
The Maple Leafs, I thought this was going to be the biggest story in Toronto today, but something else broke, and we'll talk about that at the end. But Rick Nash apparently included Toronto on his list of teams that he would go to. What are the Leafs going to do? Where are their fortunes? You know, I know Lamoriello's in the last year of a contract, and, you know, I don't think that has anything to do with anything. But, you know, it's an interesting time to be around the Toronto Maple Leafs. Would they be interested in a player like Nash?
He only makes sense if they're moving someone else out, you know, which is possible. I mean, Jan Riemsdyk being an unrestricted free agent, you know, as I reported on the weekend, I do know two teams at least have been told that the Leafs aren't moving him, but, you know, it's still 2 weeks from the deadline. Maybe another deal arises. Maybe something which aren't anticipating happens and, you know, causes them to change their mind on that. But, you know, as you're looking at the Leafs, the way they're constructed right now, I mean, they don't have much of a need for a winger. You know, I think that if they could get help at center, that would be the most logical thing, you know, that they are likely to do, that they could do. You know, they're bound to lose Tyler Bozak, it appears, as a free agent. So, you know, they don't really have anyone else in the organization that you could reasonably pencil in as a third line center for next year. If there was that kind of player out there, you know, Derek Brassard, for example, in Ottawa, I'm not sure the Senators would be all that eager to deal Brassard to the Leafs, you know, just given the way those teams are compared, and they're in the same division, much like Calgary and Edmonton don't make a lot of trades between the organizations. But that's the sort of player I could see the Leafs making a pitch for, because it gives you a guy under contract for next year. He's an experienced player. He's the replacement for Bozak in the long term, and in the short term, you get deeper at the position and have more options. But, you know, the truth of the matter is, I wouldn't be all that surprised if the Leafs end up doing nothing. I mean, they have 15 forwards right now. I mean, that's the most likely move to make is trading one or two players off their roster, and you know, with not the goal to get something back for the moment, but just to either give those guys new opportunities or to get a couple depth draft picks for down the road. But, you know, I don't see them as major buyers at this deadline, just because, you know, there isn't a number one pairing right-hand D out there that's going to solve all the problems or make their blue line that much better at this point. I think that, you know, as we saw when they were involved in the Travis Hamonic deal, and maybe, you know, call him a number one right-hand D, but he's at least on your second pairing. Certainly, you know, I could see them getting a little more bolder in the offseason, but they've won 8 of their last 9 games. They're in pretty good position. They're healthy. And you know, it really wouldn't surprise me if this passes by without much, you know, much surprise from them. But, you know, the one caveat is Lou Lamoriello doesn't keep his cards close. And, you know, I'm speaking with a lot of agents and players and people around the Leafs. I don't get the feeling anyone really knows what is going to happen here. I just don't see a whole lot that they can do logically.
Finally, it wouldn't be a visit in Calgary without asking about the local hockey heroes and if they've come through your ringer at all. My contention, and I think I alluded to it before, I believe they're a team that would be looking for, you know, a third line winger at this point, or somebody that could play in their top nine. Is Calgary and Brad for Living popping up in many of your conversations?
Well, certainly that's where I expect to see the Flames make a move. And, you know, I do wonder if the Leafs and the Flames have a connection here. You know, just because some of the players the Leafs have, you know, are young and you know, they're not guarantees. I think that they could probably be had pretty, you know, cost effectively, depending on what mood they find Lou in when they make that call. But, you know, the Flames have been one of the teams that have been watching the Leafs a fair bit. And, you know, I do wonder if there's something going on between those two teams. I mean, look, they're just a fit. I mean, the Leafs have lots of forwards. They have young wingers, and they have the kind of players I think could be had you know, for a more effective price. Because as we mentioned last week, Rob, I mean, the Flames don't look like an organization that have the sort of assets to really get in for the biggest names. And you know, with some of the draft picks given up already in other trades, and where they stand, you know, might be more bargain hunting. And you know, perhaps we'll see a Toronto-Calgary trade at some point. And if that happens, I'll be able to give you a good scouting report, because I spent a long time around the Leafs watching the guys in question.
Well, and they have done it before. We will all remember January 30th of 2010. So there is a history there. Before I let you go, you're not...
How do you remember that date?
There's kind of a little bit of a story. There was supposed to be somebody around this program was turning 40, and there was supposed to be a big surprise birthday party. And then that guy got woken up and had to go into work because Dion Phaneuf got traded. And so he never had his big 40th birthday party.
Now, and if I recall correctly about that day, that was a Sunday morning, pretty early Eastern time when that
guy was
announced. So that'd be a very early Sunday morning mountain time when you were getting woken up.
Yep, sure was.
Well,
so
happy birthday.
Yeah. No,
one to remember.
Yeah, thank you. Speaking of remembering, you're an Ontario guy. Jerry Howarth, 36 years, he's retiring today. Obviously, big story across the whole network and across our shop. But anything that jumps out at you, any fun Jerry Howarth memories?
Well, I think if you do anything for 36 years, and especially that kind of job where there's lots of people that would be more than happy to take it from you, I mean, that's a real accomplishment to stay at the top of the game as long as Jerry did. And you know, for anyone who's grown up, certainly in this neck of the woods, but I think as a Blue Jays fan, he's provided sort of one of the soundtracks of the team, especially for those that are a little younger and maybe don't remember Tom Cheek's voice along with his on those broadcasts. And you know, I'm one of those. I can remember growing up being in the backyard. We had a pool when I was a kid, and we'd always have the Blue Jays game on. And you know, one of the things I love about baseball is it's 162 games. The games are long. They're stretched out. It's, to me, it's a 6-month conversation about the team, basically. I mean, the individual games don't matter so much, but you're always kind of assessing where you're at. And that conversation, I think, still has a really important place on radio around that particular sport, especially. And you know, that's the conversation Jerry's been having with a whole generation and more, really two generations of Blue Jays fans. So, you know, I just think it's quite an achievement to do it as long as he has, as well as he has, and he'll be missed. My people are used to that familiar voice. I mean, it's amazing how you grow attached to, you know, whoever it is, the play-by-play person or people for the teams you love. I mean, you just get used to almost welcoming them into your home as one of the family. And I think that's what Jerry was for a lot of Blue Jays fans.
Good stuff. Thanks for doing this, pal. We will talk to you on Thursday.
All right. Sounds good, Rob. Take care, pal.